Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of Radcast. This month we have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Dan Fascia, who is a consultant radiologist well known in the space for being an educator, tech enthusiast, and serial entrepreneur. He's also most notably behind projects such as PaxSpin. So given his vast experience, we thought it would be great to get his perspective on the major technological trends affecting the specialty and to discuss his various entrepreneurial exploits.
So yeah, it's very nice of you to join us, Dan. We are under a strict time limit, as you have to get off to radiology masters, which is one of your many side gigs that we may chat about later on. So we'll jump straight in. Can you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. Thank you very much for having me, gentlemen. So my name is Dan Fascia, and I'm a musculoskeletal radiologist. I do my clinical work up in Harrogate in Yorkshire in the UK. I figure you do have an international audience, so I better say that. I, as you say, have some other interests. So I guess my most significant other interest is all things health tech, and specifically AI applied to medical imaging. But I do also still code some things myself, and that spawned a few other projects.
Great. So yeah, you're clearly someone who has been interested in tech for a long time before it was cool to have AI in your Twitter bio. So where did this sort of love affair with technology begin?
It's really, really early for me, actually. It probably goes all the way back to when I was about 7 or 8 years old, when I got my first computer and somehow happened upon BASIC, as in the programming language BASIC, and just started messing around with it. And then I guess a couple of years later, I actually started having some coding lessons and moved on to some more difficult languages and got quite into kind of video game programming, or more specifically cracking games to remove the copy protection, which may have got me in minor trouble. Yeah.
Did you ever consider pursuing a career in computer science rather than medicine?
Yeah, well, I did go to a medical school that allowed like outside topics. So in Edinburgh for the first, I think it was the first 2 years, you could pursue other stuff. And so I did used to go to computer science classes and also to some French and Italian classes.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Can you code in French and Italian?
Well, fortunately, English is the international language of coding, and no serious coder would consider writing their comments and stuff in other languages.
Wait, so,
was the tech aspect of radiology a factor in your decision to pursue this career?
Absolutely. And I didn't start off in radiology. I actually pursued orthopedics for quite a while, up to being a first year reg. And it was at that point that I kind of realized I really, really did see a lot of future in health tech, and radiology was the place that had the most of it, and I wanted to swap to that.
When did you go into radiology? What year would it have been?
Oh, you're asking my age. So it was, it was 2009 that
2009.
I swapped over. So I started reg training in 2009.
So that's like, is that around the time when we went digital and all of the films went to PAX? Or
no, I think that had happened quite a bit before that. I can remember being a junior doctor and we already had PAX. I guess there were a few kind of archaic places that still had film but did have a RIS to report onto. But you know, PAX was widely available. When I moved across, I think plain like film printing was a minority trade, but you know, worldwide there's still a lot of film being printed.
Yeah,
it's like I feel like as time has gone on, the sort of trend of technology and radiology is like it's going exponential, and it's almost like for you as someone who is really interested in this, I imagine it's like the specialty has come even more towards what you like.
Yeah, definitely the case. I think when I started out as a reg, I was still regarded as that kind of nerdy reg who liked tech stuff and used to get kind of asked, like, can you help us do something? And now it's kind of become more normal. And I always like to quote, don't mock a nerd because you will work for one day. And I think that's just become really true, hasn't it? That if you look at the growth of the big companies in the world or the unicorn companies, they're run by a nerd at their heart.
Are you saying that to people who might have bullied you in school? Look at me now.
No, do you know what? You may think that the nerds get bullied at school, but I'm not sure that it's true. I mean, you know, you're often doing well in classes, and as long as you're sporty as well, I think you can you can pull it all off. So
maybe to inspire
people who are worried about showing their tech side out there, I'll reassure you, it's okay.
So are you one of those radiologists that likes to use lots of fancy gadgets to optimize their reporting experience? Like, I mean, I'm fairly low maintenance, just got my standard two-click mouse with a scroll wheel and a dictaphone handheld, of course, and that's about it. But I imagine you have like a fancy mouse with 20 buttons on it and like a weird ergonomic keyboard and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, I don't like the stuff that your average NHS hospital gives you. I mean, you know, do you use one of those computers at home? Of course you don't. Piece of junk. I mean, that mouse in particular, you've got to have a smooth scrolling wheel. A few more buttons are useful. A nice ergonomic shape to it. A soft rubberized finish. Kind of essential things.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that you're the odd one out here, Uzi. I think the mouse is important. That's like the one piece of kit that you want to be right. I upgraded mine a few years ago.
I think that the microphone is more a topic for debate, but most radiologists have sorted out their mouse game.
The free scrolling mouse wheels, you got me there. They are quite nice every time I like borrow one, but I mean, definitely not worth like invest. Okay, maybe it is worth the investing. If you're using it every day, you should probably invest in the tools of the trade. Okay, you might bully me into getting a free scrolling mouse. Anything else you do? any other fancy gadgets you use?
Well, I like using headphones and a boom microphone instead of that thing that you hold in your hand, because why should I dedicate my left arm to that microphone when, you know, I've got two of them. They were given for a reason, and you use it to just hold a microphone with an on-off switch. So I like the boom arm. It also gives a much better signal to noise ratio for voice recognition, so it tends to be more accurate and better at shutting out extraneous noises as well.
Very interesting.
That's interesting, because I use a headset, and I was thinking, what about just using the microphone that we record the podcasts with? Why does that sit dormant
whilst I'm reporting topic.
When I'm talking to it all the time?
I mean, I think you have to dive into microphone technology at this point and learn about your different microphones. So if you're using an omnidirectional microphone, it's going to pick up everything in the room. And your next step is one called a cardioid, which picks up things in a heart-shaped pattern in front of it. And then the ones that your sort of radio presenters use literally pick up a tiny bit in front of them called a dynamic mic. And ones that are quite successful, if you want to give them a try. Have you ever seen a thing called a shotgun mic, which you put on top of a video camera? You've probably seen it in like movie recording situations. One of those is quite successful for radiology if you put it on top of your screen.
Interesting. Okay. So it can even get Dragon to detect your voice.
I mean, all of these things really improve voice recognition because they're helping block out noises that you don't want and get a better signal of your voice. And that's what it needs for a good recording.
Some solid advice there. Okay,
I had to move away from the usual NHS dictaphone because I was starting to suffer with ulnar neuritis. So I was looking for alternatives. But yeah, maybe I should look beyond a headset. That's some good advice.
It gives a few conditions those things result in. I mean, olecranon bursitis from leaning on the desk, and subacromial bursitis from a lot of people seem to sort of sit with an abducted shoulder holding it like they're in some sort of action position.
Well, I one thing I have invested in is a standing desk, which that's one thing I will swear by. I don't sit down. Are you a standing desk man as well?
Not so much, but every day that I work, I do half day of intervention and half day of reporting.
Okay, yeah.
So that's my way of breaking it up and standing.
So Dan, you're directly involved in trying to integrate AI into clinical practice through your roles with the RCR Informatics Committee and also the Yorkshire Imaging Collaborative. How do you view the radiology AI landscape at the moment in terms of real utility?
Good question. It's it's very primitive, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, it's, in my view, it's been driven by what they can make and not what we need. So I think it's a bunch of, you know, computer scientists coming out of academia who have said, well, we've got image recognition algorithms that can do this and that. You know, we can train them to pattern recognize, and that can get rid of radiologists. And it isn't really what I would come up with if somebody said, what needs solving with AI in the radiology business?
Yeah. So it's like when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah. So they're not really coming at it from the point of what problems need to be solved. It's more like, yeah, I've got this computer science degree.
Why would you pick radiologists as a group to kind of go for in replacing work? If you think about it, they're already some very highly educated people with a medical degree, with postgraduate medical training, and then radiology training. And even then, you know, as a consultant, you're still on your journey to learning. So it's crazy to think that that is the person that you will go for and replace the job. Meanwhile, we cannot book and attend patients with any consistency. You know, we fail to sort of send SMS or message-based reminders to look at somebody's postcode and distance to the hospital, traffic conditions on the way, and predict that they're going to be late or not show up, that kind of thing. I'd like to see AI deal with admin before it tries to do image interpretation.
Yeah.
That is so interesting. Yeah, all of those sort of workflow and logistics aspects that AI could really solve without any of the sort of regulatory issues as well, and all of the variables that come with the clinical interpretation. That would seem like a much easier place to start.
Yeah. I mean, protocoling studies, passing the clinical details provided and applying some statistics based on the study that's requested, you know, like a CTPA. Things like, based on what you've said, the patient demographics and my knowledge of every CTPA ever carried out in this hospital, this is unlikely to be the right test or the final test, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be done in those kind of domains, I think, instead of trying to analyze x-rays.
Have you been following what's been going on with Babylon Health? I read an article about them yesterday, and maybe it's like a cautionary tale for organizations sort of.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
I can remember about 3 years ago being told, as I attended a conference where I had a lecture spot with the Babylon CEO in another spot, being told by the chair, just don't rock the boat with your questions with this guy. We know you're pretty skeptical about what he does. Just don't rock the boat.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I think inside the industry and inside medicine, we'd seen quite a few chinks in the armor a good while back.
Okay, so yeah, you I think, what was it, your head of the or clinical director, regional clinical director of the Yorkshire Imaging Collaborative, and that's a network, right?
Yeah, so NHS England has divided the country into regional imaging networks, and that is the network which represents a large chunk of Yorkshire, covering West Yorkshire and Harrogate and District. And we actually predate the creation of those imaging networks. We'd kind of set it up anyway, as had a couple of other people. But that's what we now officially represent.
So sort of how important is that network model in terms of trying to implement AI in a standardized, joined up manner within hospitals, within a network, but then also between different regions? Is that sort of the best way to do it, you think?
Well, personally, I think it's really a good way to do it, because you will find yourself repeating a lot of governance, knowledge search and infrastructure building if you try to do it on a per hospital basis. And so if you have common infrastructures, like, for example, a regional PACS in place already, then it makes sense to create one AI sandbox adjacent to it, rather than carrying out connections to every individual PACS or site in your region. And that's how we're doing it. We're trying to create a single point of AI integration.
How integrated is your network in terms of clinical practice? Can you report across sites?
So since April 2020, we've had full visibility of every image and every report across the 29 hospitals in our network. And then we got given an extra project from NHS England, which was to extend it into a cross-network reporting model. And so that's what we've been working on for the past, getting on for 2 years. And it's actually quite complicated. You know, the whole concept of opening a study from one place, transferring the images, locking it so someone else can't report it, and then doing a report and transiting it back to the right location, it is all actually quite complicated. So we are in a sort of testing phase of it at the moment, but January will be our big launch for it.
Can you tell us about the Yorkshire Imaging AI Seed Fund Accelerator?
Sure. So I guess I personally find the way that NHS business cases are executed to be quite painful. And so we wanted to... Is that polite? I wanted to do something a bit different. So doing something a bit different was in the form of ring-fencing a small amount of money, but allowing people to experiment within their hospitals by awarding the money after they applied for it, and giving them up to £40,000 to try out an off-the-shelf AI product in their hospital for 1 year, and to declare at the beginning a metric which they were going to try and change or improve with the use of AI, and then, you know, report back to us on how did it go deploying it, integrating it, and what did it do for your metric. Now, of course, it's a little bit, there's a little bit of self-interest here, which is I also wanted 6 experiments to run in 1 year so that I could pick the best ones to then translate to regional scale.
So the individual hospitals apply to you, and basically if they say we want to use this, we want to trial this algorithm, you give them the money.
Yeah, so there was a bit of an application process. They'd come forward and say, problem we're trying to solve is, for example, fracture detection on X-ray. Perhaps the reason we're doing it is to help the ED frontline people who are not experts in this to sort of reach a faster diagnosis, less dependency on secondary review in fracture clinic, that kind of thing. So we'd say, okay, that sounds valid. Come up with a metric that you want a single variable you want to demonstrate against, and do your market research and choose a product which you think will do that. And then we set them off to sort of get on with it and check in with them every so often to see how it's going.
What solutions are being trialed at the moment?
So We have got two sites doing fracture detection on appendicular plane films. They're both using a product from Radiobotics, which is a Danish company.
Oh, yeah.
Jamie's did a webinar with them.
Yeah. Ah, okay. So you know them. Yeah. Yeah,
we know them.
So we've got that in Harrogate and in Leeds. And then we've got two different chest x-ray products, and they're looking at slightly different metrics with those. But of course, the big AI diagnostic fund has also come along from NHS England, which is chest x-ray based. So we're glad to get a little bit of a head start looking at a few products, because we've already got, I say a few, because we've already got one established in our region, and then we've got two on trial. So we'll have had a good look at three by the time we have to run our process of choosing. Then beyond that, we've got a CT trial in two places. One of them, very interesting actually, one is to look at the CT heads which happen during the night and triage them to normal or abnormal. And then the abnormal ones can be outsourced for reporting, whereas the normal ones could potentially be kept in-house to report in a delayed fashion in the morning. So that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's
interesting application of the AI there.
Yeah, and then we have another product which is CT based, which is to try and support the on-call regs in one of the busiest centres in Leeds, just sort of giving them a second set of eyes on things like the tricky abdomens.
So, how do you, as the sort of imaging collaborative, how do you decide on what tools are maybe ready to trial? Like, do you have lots of different companies coming to you constantly trying to sell you their fancy tools, and you have to like select between them?
Yeah, I mean, I think the last count I was getting about six contacts a week from AI companies to try and show something or see if I wanted to talk about something that they've already mentioned. And it's quite oppressive, actually. You know, like
oppressive.
It is. It gets a bit too much. I've actually sort of toned down going to conferences because I don't want to walk through the vendor
hall. You've got a target on your back. Yeah. They know you're the man who makes the decisions.
So I think, I mean, it's important to gather knowledge and have a knowledge when you're a network lead of what's out there, but also to set people off who are topic experts to go and investigate things and do regular roundups of a marketplace if you're thinking about deploying something for the chest, for example, because it is a fast landscape.
Yeah, and there must be so many different companies competing, offering essentially the same solutions, all stating why theirs are better than the competitors. And it's not like you can trial them all, or there's any benefit to doing that. So, I mean,
I think it's really interesting what you hint at there. You say it's not like you can trial them all. One of the things that I would really look for is I want them to have an openly available web-based demonstration of their tool. Now, they can stick whatever caveats they want in front of it, you know, not for diagnostic use, or you've got to sign up to use it. But it's really important to be able to try something without going through that kind of enterprise engagement loop that they often enforce where, like, you know, oh, we'll come to your hospital, we'll set up a demo server. That's not great, actually, because that's already a sort of foot through your door.
Yeah.
And you should be able to just try these things out.
Absolutely.
So from what you've seen so far from the different tools that are out there, what do you think are the major challenges that you see to kind of more widespread adoption at the moment?
Well, I must open with, of course, it's so new, we don't definitely know that they are safe and fully accurate. So any deployment that I make at the moment very strictly has the word trial on it. But I do feel that they are good enough to move into operational trial under surveillance conditions rather than, you know, just being in silico, which is like in vitro for computer stuff. Then the next thing is the licensing conditions of them. So you must check that salesman does not just claim that it does things that it is not licensed to. So I'll give you an example in the chest world. Hey, salesman, can it detect NG tubes and their position? Yes, it can. But is it actually licensed to do that? And therefore, could I use it in my hospital for that purpose? Very different questions to address.
Right, interesting. Okay, so have you done much AI programming yourself?
I guess the answer is very primitive stuff. Right. So I did build a model to try and recognize a torn meniscus versus an intact one. And I did it by using a method called transfer learning, which is where you train the model on being able to recognize lots of features. Is it a cat or is it not a cat? Is it a dog or is it not a dog? You know, that kind of thing.
Mm.
And then you throw it a new scenario and say, actually, here's a new batch of details. That's an intact meniscus and that's a torn meniscus. So I did this and I was delighted at how well it worked. And then I tried some images from a different scanner and I realized that I hadn't made the next billion-dollar product.
Right.
But then I trained it on a wider range of scans. Mm. And the thing that I realized at the end of all of this was, if I pointed myself at this, like through a webcam, it thought I was an intact meniscus. So it just wasn't all that great, really.
Wow.
But the big lesson was that actually a lot of the algorithms may be a tiny part of it, and things like recognizing that what it's been sent is in fact an mRNA, recognizing what the series are, the planes, the sequences, and does it even contain a meniscus or have I thrown it like an elbow?
Mm. Right.
So all of that is probably quite hard before you can run your little algorithm, is what I discovered.
Do you think it's important for radiologists to have proficiency with this, or is it overkill? Like, should it be in the curriculum, and to what extent?
I don't think they need to learn how to build algorithms or code solutions themselves, although we are seeing many more trainees who are interested in that coming through. But I do think that being able to critique a solution and understand the safety parameters involved in deploying it into clinical use, and you know, the sort of audit parameters and safety reporting involved, is probably quite useful. Maybe like in an institution, you need somebody who is your person who takes care of that stuff.
Have you played around with any other AI tools outside of medicine, like ChatGPT, for example?
Oh, definitely. I've played around with a lot more outside of medicine than I have in medicine. So, yeah, ChatGPT is great fun and occasionally useful. I suppose there was a period, wasn't there, where we were all super into it and playing with it, marveling at it, and it's probably worn off a little bit for me. But do you know what? Most useful scenarios for programming. If I've got a piece of code that doesn't work, or I just haven't got a clue how to deal with a scenario, that's what I ask ChatGPT to do.
Mm.
And it's brilliant at that subject. What else have I played with? I had a play with a lot of the generative image tools for a while as well. You know, getting them to make extremely far-fetched and ridiculous images.
Sort of, what are your views generally on this stuff? Does it make you excited or scared? Do you think it's a threat to humanity?
It's probably like a lot of technologies. You can put it to incredible benevolent use and horrific malevolent use. And I'm quite sure that the bad guys will use it to its full potential, and already are. Hopefully society kind of levels out and prefers the good uses. I'm not sure about the whole regulation talk that's going on at a sort of international scale at the moment. I think, why would you pick on AI versus other computer technologies to regulate and intervene on?
Yeah, it's... Well, there's been a lot of hysteria, hasn't there, drummed up in the media about it, and a lot of the policymakers, they're not very informed about the technology, so they'll get caught carried away with that. But you have a lot of informed voices, I suppose, who are sounding the alarm. So, got like Elon Musk asking for a moratorium over the development and stuff.
Mm.
But it's, yeah, kind of impossible. The cat's already out of the bag, so.
But one of them's the same informed voice that said radiologists don't need to exist in 5 years. And unfortunately, time called him out, didn't it?
Yeah.
And so he's extended it to 10 years, and I'm looking forward to time calling him out again.
Yeah, he does love his dramatic quotes, doesn't he? That Jeffrey Hinton guy.
Headline-grabbing statements.
Yeah. You think he might learn after getting it badly wrong once that maybe don't put sort of such a precise time on it. Yeah.
So besides AI, is there any other tech that you're really interested in that could be useful in radiology? I saw recently you sent a tweet to Apple asking to try out their new VR headset for medical standards purposes, obviously. Did you get a response?
No, I can't believe they didn't respond. I mean, Apple, if you're listening to this podcast, especially one of the people who helped you back in the day to get iPads kind of cleared for diagnostic use based on their screen specs.
Oh, wow.
I can't believe you won't send me a headset to use.
Do you think that could genuinely be useful or just a gimmick?
I haven't tried one out because I didn't get a free one. But I think it could be quite fatiguing. I mean, if you've ever tried them out for gaming or kind of other recreational scenarios, there's only so long you can leave it on, and I think they're quite headache-inducing. Mm. There's a weight to them, so it adds a load onto your cervical spine, and you do sort of turn your head around to look within the space. So I'm not sure. Perhaps more of a gimmick than a tool.
Right. Okay, so I definitely wanted to ask you about Paxbin, because it's a website that we've all used a lot, and I only found out fairly recently that you are the man behind it, which is very impressive. So can you tell us how that sort of came about?
Yeah, well, I must give you the true facts on it. So actually, the real man behind it who started it all up is Jason Hostetter, who's over in the US. He's a neuroradiologist, and it had been running a while before I got involved with it, but I did that because he is an incredible back-end programmer, all things DICOM databases, and I like more front-end programming, which is the visual part that you use. And so we started working together on it to try and sort of send it in a future direction. And I'm always impressed at the uses people come up with for it, really. It's being used for things far beyond what we ever thought possible and intended. And it's great to hear you guys use it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Are you still working on it?
Yes, and I must say that the fact that we're both busy radiologists with small families and other interests means that we do kind of go at a bit of a slow pace. But I suppose the biggest improvement that I hope you've seen within the last kind of year has been the new uploader tool. Have you had a look at that? I think it's now the default uploader. So
Right. I haven't, I don't think. Maybe I've just not noticed it.
So what I'll explain is, I mean, it depends when you started using it. You may only know that uploader. So if we go back a few years ago, what used to happen was you uploaded your studies and they got anonymized on one of our servers, and then they were displayed. And this was a problem for organizations who were data protective, and you can understand why. So then we used to have to install a little gateway tool onto computers in hospitals to do the anonymization before it traveled to Paxbin. And installing anything on a hospital computer is a nightmare. because you have to work with their IT departments. So Jason worked really hard and came up with in-browser anonymization. So now when you drop your studies onto the browser window in PackSpin, it anonymizes them right there in the browser before it transmits to the server. So we got rid of this dependency to install a piece of software and then manage it and upgrade it and all that stuff. So it was, for us, it was a huge change.
Yeah, definitely.
Interesting. So, I mean, far be it from me to suggest any improvements to your...
Oh, please do.
Maybe. What about NPR? Is that coming anytime soon?
I think it's the number one feature request on our
list. Yeah, I can imagine.
And, we are doing it, but like I say, our pace of work on it is perhaps not what we hope for. But NPR has only fairly recently become possible within the browser. And if you've ever seen it in a browser-based PAX before, it's every possibility it was happening kind of behind the scenes and then being sent to the browser. But now it's genuinely possible in the browser because of the power of GPUs and some of the kind of libraries that the browser allows access to. So we are working on it.
Great, yeah. So and it's not something when you like make something like that, like do you actively market it, or is it just like you put it out there and it's spread through word of mouth? Because that's how I found out about it.
Yeah, same.
I think that if we were a big corporation behind it, sure, we'd be marketing it because we'd be very interested in, you know, every month how many new users have we got and that kind of thing. But because the origins of it are through research and educational use, then it tends to sort of virally grow in the right circles, because when you share something with PackSpin, everyone can see it's PackSpin and they have a curiosity to say, what is this thing? So we get the right kind of organic growth in that way, rather than lots of like trial users who never kind of pursue a proper account.
Yeah.
So with all these plates that you're spinning across clinical work, tech, entrepreneurial commitments and teaching, how do you find time to have a social life?
I guess just ring fencing time for different things has always been a decent skill of mine. You know, I'll decide maybe Tuesday night you work on one thing, Wednesday night you do another. And also, I've never traveled too much for work. I try and sort of do it remotely or make it come towards me. I find that buys you back a lot of time in the day. But then if I'm truthful, things wax and wane. So, you know, there's periods where we're doing lots of work with radiology masters because we're doing a course, and then we're not for a while and I can turn my attention to something else. It's not good to have too many things. It sounds like I might have a lot of projects on the go, but there's a specific list of things and I don't tend to keep adding more.
Is radiology masters a sort of big commitment?
It's not too bad, because I'd say back in about 2019, I built lots of the infrastructure needed for it, and it was harder work back then. But now it kind of runs mostly autopilot with a little bit of kind of communication when we're running a course. So it's not too bad at all. We have some big changes coming for it, though, so that will be some more development work again.
Is it still just you, JC, and Radhika who do it, or do you get other people to help?
Over the years, we have done courses where we've invited other specialists on topics to come on by request. So we've had sort of breast, pediatric, neuro, and nuclear medicine radiologists. But we are the core team that do most of it, and we remain that. Most of the time that works just fine, unless we're doing some kind of bigger, more ambitious course where we need these subspecialists.
Great. Well, I mean, that's everything we wanted to cover. So brilliant. We finished well within the time limit, so you can have a little bit of a break before you torture some Viva candidates. Thank you very much for this. It's been really, really fun and interesting. And yeah, good luck with all of your future exploits.
Thank you. I hope it wasn't torture on Radiology Masters, by the way. We're usually very kind. So.
No, joking. No, no. Very, very constructive and supportive.
Good stuff.
Completely agree. So thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back next month with another episode. And in the meantime, you can catch all of our previous episodes on the usual podcast platforms and at anchor.fm/radcast. And for more updates, check out our social media channels, so Radcast Academy on Twitter and Instagram. Bye.
Goodbye.